Chapter 9, a resident of Vrindavan. I was sitting alone in Vrindavan writing. My god brother insisted to me, Bhaktivedanta Prabhu, you must do it. Without accepting the renounced order of life, nobody can become a preacher. So he insisted. Not he insisted, practically my spiritual master insisted. He wanted me to become a preacher, so he forced me through this god brother. You accept. So unwillingly, I accepted. Srila Prabhupada. The passenger cars behind the locomotive moved forward almost silently, thumping at a slow rhythm over the tracks. The train pulled out of the station, past freight yards, a neighborhood of run-down tenements, the old Delhi fort, the garbage dump at Nizamuddin, with its hundreds of crows and vultures flying overhead, and then past a marble-domed red sandstone mosque. Seated in a third-class compartment, his luggage stored beneath his seat, Abhay could see factory workers walking near the tracks, carrying their lunches in metal tiffins, and then the factories surrounded by huts of mud and straw. He passed the thatched roofs and tarpaulin tents, the cow dung fires that smoked in the morning air, the tall stacks of Indraprastha electrical powerhouse spewed out a different smoke, and sooty black clouds poured back from the locomotive. He saw red and violet wildflowers blooming from bramble bushes at trackside, and beyond he saw the road to Mathura with its border of fruitless kikar trees. It was the morning train to Agra, and there were few passengers. Abhay would be riding as far as Mathura and then traveling by Tanga to Vrindavan. He had ridden widely the Indian railway, especially in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, when he had traveled on business in Bengal, Punjab, Uttar Pradesh, Maharashtra, and Andhra Pradesh. He had been to Vrindavan several times. In his childhood reveries over the train timetables, it had been the first place he had thought of visiting. His first visit in 1925 had been but a brief pilgrimage while he had been in nearby Agra on business. Then in 1932, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had been in Vrindavan on Parikram. That had been a memorable visit. Abhay had heard him speak at Koshi, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had marked him, he likes to hear. And then at Radhakund, 3 years later, he had been with his spiritual master again. But he had never gone like this, to live there. Dressed in a simple white dhoti, his hand in his bead bag, fingering his japa beads, he looked out the window, quietly chanting the holy name. The train passed through the dense thickets of Faridabad and into the agricultural lands with their interspersed patches of wheat, dal, and sugarcane, beginning at trackside and stretching for half a mile to the dry, uncultivated land that continued as far as the eye could see. The train sped faster. Rural villages drifted past the window. An hour out of Delhi, the land was mostly flat and open, dotted with small villages. Occasionally he would glimpse a striking old temple, but mostly it was the land, now barren with a few palm trees, now cultivated with irrigated fields, under the expanse of blue sky and blazing sun. For a long time, Abhay had wanted to take shelter in Vrindavan, and now there was no obstacle. His purpose remained the same. He would write back to Godhead and deliver it to the printer in Delhi, fortnightly. As long as he could afford to travel, he would return to Delhi to distribute back to Godhead, but he would live in the shelter of Vrindavan. He had in mind the room at the Vanshi Gopalaji temple near Keshika, a rooftop room that commanded a view of almost all of Vrindavan. And since his 1953 visit from Jhansi, he had kept in touch with the temple manager. Starting next time at the top of the right-hand page.
Nizamji is another railway station in Delhi. They have New Delhi railway station, Nizamji, which Prabhupada just mentioned. It's old railway station.
Old.
So he was going from there.
Yes.
You know, it's just like if you live in Boston, you know all the stations.
Right. South Station.
Yeah.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
There is in front of the first chapter that it is Maharaj Sriyabhadra. And today the rest is, so I'm sorry for that. I think we should go. Okay, we can just read it all together because I don't know which method to do. I guess nobody knows because it's given just like in one line.
Under the canopy of the sky.
Is it Tate or Tale?
We have Tate.
Tala.
Oh, because here it's Tale. So it's probably in your book. I guess it's like some mis in my book. No, they didn't. When you composed, yeah.
I think.
No line here. It's Tate. Because it doesn't look like L, but there is no that.
Yeah.
So Gagana Tate, under the canopy of the sky. Udupati.
Udupati.
The moon.
Iva.
Light. Vimana Avalibhi.
Vimana Avalibhi.
In their different airplanes. Anupata.
Along the path.
Amara.
Of the demigods.
Parivridha. By the leaders. Api Pujyamana. Being worshipped. Pati Pati.
On the way.
One after another. Cha. Also. Varutasha. In groups.
Sida.
By the residents of Sida Loka. Gandharva. By the residents of Gandharva Loka.
Sadhya.
By the residents of Sadhya Loka.
By the residents of Sadhya Loka.
Charana. By the residents of the Charana Loka.
By the residents of Charana Loka.
Muni Ganai. And by great sages.
Upagi Yamana.
Being worshipped. Gandha Madana.
On the planet where the Gandha Madana hill is found.
Dronim.
The border.
Avabhasayan.
Illuminating.
Upasasarpa.
He approached.
Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. As Lord Brahma descended on his carrier, the great swan, all the residents of the planets named Siddha-loka, Gandharva-loka, Sadhya-loka, and Charana-loka, as well as great sages and demigods flying in their different airplanes, assembled within the canopy of the sky to receive Lord Brahma and worship him. As he received respect and adoration from the residents of the various planets, Lord Brahma appeared just like the full moon, surrounded by illuminating stars. Lord Brahma's great swan then arrived at the border of Gandhamadana Hill and approached Prince Priyavrata, who was sitting there. Purport. It appears from the description that there is regularly interplanetary travel between the planets of the demigods. Another significant point is that there is a planet covered mostly by great mountains, one of which is Gandhamadana Hill. Three great personalities, Priyavrata, Narada, and Svayambhuva Manu, were sitting on this hill. According to Brahma Samhita, each universe is filled with different planetary systems, and every system has a unique opulence. For example, on Sivaloka, all the residents are very advanced in the powers of mystic yoga. They can fly from one planet to another without airplanes or other flying machines. Similarly, the residents of Gandharva Loka are expert in musical science, and those on Sadhya Loka are all great saints. The interplanetary system undoubtedly exists, and residents of different planets may go from one to another. On this Earth, however, we have not invented any machine that can go directly from one planet to another, although an unsuccessful attempt has been made to go directly to the moon. Om Agyana Timirandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthabhitalya Shishma Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namana Namaste Sarasvati Devi Guravani Pracharana Irvishasha Shunivadi Pashtityada Shtarana Mukam Karadji Vachalam Pangum Langayata Girim Vyatkri Patamaham Vande Shikrum Jantarana. As Lord Brahma descended on his career, the great swan, all the residents of the planets named Siddhaloka, Gandharvaloka, Sadhyaloka, and Charanaloka, as well as great sages and demigods flying in their different airplanes, assembled within the canopy of the sky to receive Lord Brahma and worship him. As he received respect and adoration from the residents of the various planets, Lord Brahma appeared just like a full moon surrounded by illuminating stars. Lord Brahma's great swan then arrived at the border of Gandhamadana Hill and approached Prince Priyavrata, who was sitting there. Here, like very interesting verses, we read description of Lord Brahma. There are not so many actually things about Lord Brahma as I remember when we read. And he's very significant, especially in our Sampradaya. As we know, he's the head of our Sampradaya, which Lord Chaitanya have chosen. Yeah, our Sampradaya's name is Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya. So it starts from Lord Brahma. And also, great Haridas Thakur Namacharya, Acharya of the chanting of the holy name, he is no one else but Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma is a very special personality. And we have also Brahma Samhita. Who knows how, is it like Brahma Samhita, is it prayers by Lord Brahma? Or what's that?
We only
have
the fifth chapter of
that.
Lord Chaitanya found the fifth chapter
in Adikeshwa Temple in Tamil Nadu, in South India. Lord Chaitanya found that. And so we can see that there is some connection. So Lord Brahma is very significant. And it is said when we read Srila Prabhupada. I guess yesterday you listened to Srila Prabhupada lecture about, was it also about Lord Brahma? Because I found a description of Lord Brahma from Srila Prabhupada lecture from 1968, just beginning when he just came. It was lecture on Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya, Leela, 20th chapter, many verses. And it was in December 20th in New York, 1968. So he's saying about Lord Brahma. Srila Prabhupada is saying, so Brahma is a living entity. And then later on he will explain that sometimes it's different, but just I will read what Srila Prabhupada is saying, so listen attentively. Brahma is a living entity. Now, what is the constitution of Brahma? Brahma, just there are so many innumerable living entities. If some of them, they're devotees, but they want to enjoy this material world. They want to enjoy. So they are devotees, taking some favor for God and want to enjoy this material world, to enjoy this material world. He is called Brahma. Brahma's constitutional position is there. Sometimes such pious living entities are not available. So sometimes Krishna himself becomes Brahma. And for maintenance, for creation. So sometimes Krishna himself becomes Lord Brahma. When there is 49 verse from Brahma Samhita. Basvam yathasma sakaleshu nijeshu teja. Do you know this? Because I know, like in 70s, I was told that devotees here in Boston Temple, they all learned that Brahma Samhita, and they would repeat it every morning while pujaris, they would dress in the deities. I just know because Niranjan Swami also was doing that, I guess. Did you do that?
I didn't do it. I had like two or three Brahmins behind the altar reciting the Brahma Samhita every morning.
And they recited all the Brahma Samhita?
Yeah. All the Sanskrit.
By mind?
Yeah.
Shishira to get back to the future. Basvam yathasma sakalesu nijeshu teja sviyam kiyat prakatayatya pitatya datra brahmaya esha jagadanda vidham karta govinda madhi purusham tamaham gajami. So Srila Prabhupada is quoting this verse. Now, Brahma's description is given here. That basvam yathasma sakalesu nijeshu teja. Just like valuable stone. The example is very nice, valuable stone, just like diamond. Diamond has got power to illuminate. Maybe we didn't see that because I personally didn't see many diamonds, but I guess like some emperors before kings, like they had in their treasury boxes like many valuable stones, and so usually I guess when they depict their treasuries, they're just some candles, so when you open that treasury box and many valuable stones, they just illuminate the surroundings. Also, to know that in hellish planets, there is few planets, they're called Naga Lokas, where Nagas live. Nagas, they are like serpents, but they're very intelligent, like materially intelligent serpents, and their technology is very highly developed. So they actually have on their body gemstones here. So they live in their planets, sunlight is not coming there. So everything is illuminated by jewels. So just to give, because for me, like when I hear that, I've never seen such a big diamond or many diamonds to know that they're illuminated, but probably it means it's a little different. So just to know that they're illuminated. So diamond has good power to illuminate. And what is this diamond? The diamond is made by the interaction of sunshine. All these valuable stones, they are interaction of sunshine. So, as the diamond has got power of shining power, it's derived from the sun or moon. So it derives power from the sun. Moon also derives power from the sun. Similarly, Brahma, also he is very powerful. He is known as creator of this universe. But he is just like diamond. He inherits power from the Supreme Lord, so he becomes powerful. Basvam yathasma sakalesu nijeshu teja. That is simply a bit of power. Just like a diamond. Diamond also illuminates, but it's not original luminous. Luminous, you say luminous?
Luminosity.
Luminous. Luminous, thanks. But it's not original luminous. Original luminous is sun. And the illumination expanded by diamond is not so valuable as sunshine. Similarly, Brahma, although we see him so powerful, he has little power derived from the Supreme Lord. That is the example given here. Kona kalpi yadi yogi jiva nahipaya apana yeshvara tabi amsha brahma haya. Kona kalpa. Kalpa means the duration of one creation. This material creation, butva butva praliyate, is created at a certain interval and it stays for some time. Again, it is annihilated. So again, at the time of creation, if somebody is not available, then the Supreme Lord Krishna, he becomes Brahma himself. And when in one of his books, Srimad Bhishmana Chakravarti Thakur, he is explaining, because like especially in India, here we know philosophy how it presented by Srila Prabhupada, so it, in its pure essence, Bhagavad Gita as it is. And in India, people, they have all the scriptures, sometimes without purport, or they just read, try to understand with their own brains. And in many places it is said, oh, Brahma is the Supreme Lord, Shiva is the Supreme Lord. And Srila Prabhupada Chakravarti Thakur is explaining in Sri Bhagavatamrita Kanda, in one of his books, that in such cases, when Lord Krishna becomes Lord Brahma, or he becomes Lord Shiva, because sometimes when there is no available, okay, we are saying about Brahma. So in these cases, you can say that he is equal, because Lord Krishna himself becomes Lord Brahma, but not in other cases. So this is from Srila Prabhupada's lecture. And again, when I read that verse, I just immediately imagined that beautiful scene. Can you imagine? Lord Brahma, the first living entity, the creator of the universe, the most pious, usually, living entity in the universe, he arrives. And all other chiefs of the demigods, they are preparing to worship him. And he is compared to the moon. And moon is beautiful, and they are all compared to the stars. So stars are very bright; they illuminate the sky. And he's compared to the moon. Yes, moon is like the chief among all the stars. So that's like the power and the fame of Lord Brahma. And I wanted, I mean, we can become very much attracted. At least myself. So I'm saying what is relevant to me. When I read all the descriptions of the demigods, or like when I read Mahabharata. And there is description again of different pastimes on the earth, with great kings and everything. It's so attractive, because they are so attractive. And especially about the demigods, because here on the earth, we are taking birth, we are little babies. We cry and we look red and ugly when you just born, like after one day you don't look ugly. And when we have to grow up, and when we die, like we first become old, diseased, yeah, when we die. In the heavenly planet it's different. Everyone who is born on the heavenly planet, they immediately become grown up. And grown up means in the pinnacle of youth. They're like very youthful. So Lord Brahma, because sometimes like at the beginning I felt, oh, maybe like he must be like 40, 50. No, they're very youthful. They're youth. They're like, I don't know, 16, 18, 20, like in the pinnacle. They're very beautiful, very attractive. And their bodies, they're not too skinny, not fat. Very attractive bodies they have. The odor from their body is actually fragrant. Yeah, so they're extremely enjoying life in the heavenly planets. And as far as I know, like, as I heard, like, they wear garland on fresh flowers on their neck, and it never dries. Yeah, and when it dries, so that means, that's how demigod understands, it's my time to go, my time to die. Because they don't become old, they don't feel diseased, like, so that's how much enjoyment is there on the heavenly planets. Women, like when they are pregnant, they are not pregnant 9 months. Baby comes immediately. They don't have to carry their belly or like to undergo some austerity. So for me, it was like very attractive. And I guess like for everyone who wants to enjoy the material world, because enjoyment in the heavenly planets are real enjoyment compared to the enjoyment here in the material world. But not to become attractive, because even like by reading all the books, like this clear explanation by Srila Prabhupada, how Bhakti Yoga is the supreme and how Krishna Loka is the supreme planet, how attractive is Krishna. Sometimes due to lack of our experience of bhakti, or maybe due to lack of real association with the devotees, we may become attracted by all these things. It's again my case, yeah? So I want to read something from this wonderful book, Shibhihat Bhagavatamrita, which Srila Prabhupada mentioned in his scripture. He said that all devotees should read that book. And when he left, his disciple, Gopi Paranidana Prabhu, he translated the book. This book, and he translated the commentaries. Actually, the commentaries are also, I guess he wrote them, but he based them also on the commentaries. So it's like all based on the commentaries of the previous devotees, great acharyas. So I have this book by Krishna Lila Prabhu's grace. I'm reading it already for many months. So when I read that verse, I immediately remembered that here there is description. So for those who may not know, Muktivedanta Prabhu, can you tell us what is this book like? Is in a sense, what's going on here? Oh, you never read it?
No.
Oh, okay. So, Narada Muni, and you know that Narada Muni, he's always absorbed in service. He services to make everyone closer to Krishna and also like to enhance the pastimes. Yeah? So here, Lord Narada, Lord Narada, of course, he's one of the avatars, Shaktivesha avatars. That's why I said Lord Narada. So Narada Muni, here, he is looking for the devotee who is the recipient of greatest of Krishna's mercy, the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. And how he's looking for that? So he started from the earth. I guess it started in Allahabad. Do you remember?
I don't remember who is the first.
Yeah, so what I remember, I may speculate, but please read that book, it's very interesting. So he's an Indian in Allahabad, and Allahabad is on the Ganges. And on the Ganges River, especially in Kumbh Mela, Makara Sankranti, it's like in January, all people like devotees and Mayavadis and like transcendentalists, and even those who are not transcendentalists yet, but they know the benefit of bathing in Ganga, they all come and they all bath there. And when one man came, he was a rich man, very powerful, and he brought his Shalagrama Shilas, and he started to worship them with great devotion, and with many items, he's offering them wonderful boga, so doing like great puja. And he's doing it with such devotion. So now, Narada Muni, he sees him, and he's thinking, oh, he's the greatest devotee of the Lord, because Narada Muni, he's very simple, he sees and he wants to praise. He's saying to him, oh, you're the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. And then, everyone he approaches, he's saying, no, it's not me. And he's saying how unfortunate he is, that Lord didn't give him mercy, like, he didn't receive any mercy of the Lord. And then he sends Narada Muni to another devotee. He said, no, that person is much better than me. So then Narada is going to another person, and that person is saying again the same. I'm not a devotee at all. I didn't receive any mercy of the Lord. You go better to that devotee. He is real devotee, much better than me. So now, finally, he came to Lord Indra. And Lord Indra, as we know, he is the king of the heavenly planets. And he praised him. And Lord Indra, he is saying, I will read till 9. And on Monday, if I will give class, we can continue because still verses will be about Lord Brahma. Because this book is very interesting. Okay, so now, Lord Indra, he is saying to Narada, but you should know, O best son of Brahma, that your own father is the true recipient of the favor of Lord Hari. He is directly the son of Lord Vishnu, the husband of Lakshmi. Commentary. The four Kumaras, headed by Sanaka, are senior to Narada by age, as are several other sons of Brahma. But Narada is superior by virtue of his pure devotion to Lord Lakshmikanta. But even better than the best son is the father, born not from Mother Lakshmi's womb, but directly from the navel of the Supreme Person. In one day of Brahma, 14 Indras like me come and go, along with different sets of Manus and all the demigods. That one day equals 1,000 cycles of earthly ages. According to the scriptures, Brahma's night is all the same duration. 360 of such days and nights make one of his years, and his life lasts 100 years. He is the creator of the planets and the rulers he assigns them. He is the world's chief protector, the dispenser of the fruits of karma, and at the onset of his night, the destroyer of the world. The Mahapurush, the thousand-headed form of the Lord, is always directly visible on Brahma's planet, personally accepting the countless oblations offered him, and thus always giving delight to his devotees. So he lives on the planet with Lord himself, with Mahapurush. That's interesting commentary. At the beginning of each day of his life, Lord Brahma appoints qualified candidates to serve as Indra, the sages, the Prajapatis, and other demigods. So they're appointed. Also, he protects the universe from chaos by establishing Vedic sacrifice and the social laws for individual classes of human beings. Thus, Brahma not only creates the universe, but maintains it as well. Indra also says that he destroys it, because when Lord Brahma goes to sleep at night, a break in his meditation partially devastates the universe. When Hiranyakashipu worshipped Brahma with the demonic aim of subverting the universal order, he glorified Brahma similarly. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord within this universe. At the end of each day of his life, the universe is fully covered with dense darkness by the influence of time. And then again, during the next day, that self-effulgent Lord, by his own effulgence, manifests, maintains, and destroys the entire cosmic manifestation through the material energy, which is invested with the three modes of material nature. He, Lord Brahma, is the shelter of those modes of nature, Sattvaguna, Rajaguna, and Tamaguna. Bhagavatam 7.3.26.27. Living together with Brahma on his planet is the incarnation of the Supreme Lord called Mahapurush. He is the thousand-headed first incarnation, Mahavishnu, whose further expansion is Garbhodakashaya Vishnu. Both of these forms are described in Srimad Bhagavatam in the first and second cantos. Lord Mahapurush is the support of material nature, and so he is described as the original source of the basic causes of creation, the five gross elements and 11 senses. He performs his pastime of creation while lying in the ocean that fills the bottom half of the universe. From his navel appears a lotus stem, from which all the forms and configurations of material existence will be manifest, and at the top of the stem grows a flower where Brahma, the chief engineer of creation, is born. Brahma discovered inside the lotus stem of his birth the detailed plans of creation. Brahma saw that the lotus on which he was situated was spread throughout the universe, and he contemplated how to create all the planets, which were previously merged in that very same lotus. Thus, engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Brahma entered into the whole of the lotus, and as it spread all over the universe, he divided it into three divisions of walls, and later into 14 divisions. In meditation, Brahma discovered the thousand-headed Mahapurush, who at first had been invisible to him from his lotus seat. He offered prayers to that Lord and made a special request. My dear Lord, may you come and live on my planet in this very form. Thus, the first Lord of creation became Brahma's constant guest. As Indra is stating, Lord Mahapurush on Brahmaloka consumes the offerings made in sacrifice, which resemble a constantly flowing river, because on Brahmaloka so many sacrifices are always being performed. Thanks to the Lord being satisfied by these offerings, the inhabitants of Brahma's planet are perpetually blissful. It is true that Lord Mahapurush is sometimes absent when he merges into Sri Krishna to join him in Mathura Dhamma on earth, and the ecstasy on Brahmaloka is accordingly interrupted. But time on Brahmaloka is so expensive that the duration of Sri Krishna's descent is barely noticeable. In effect, on Brahmaloka, Lord Mahapurush is seen constantly. I could give you thousands of other reasons why Brahma is the real object of Sri Krishna's mercy. What more needs to be said? He is in fact Krishna himself. Don't forget, this is Indra. You know this, since it is proclaimed in both Shruti and Smriti. You must also be familiar, my lord, with other aspects of Brahma's greatness and the greatness of the residents of his planet. Many scriptures, including Srimad Bhagavatam, teach that Lord Brahma is an empowered incarnation of Vishnu. Lord Vishnu said, Brahma, Lord Shiva, and I are the supreme cause of the material manifestation. I am the super soul, the self-sufficient witness. But impersonally, there is no difference between Brahma, Lord Shiva, and me. My dear Dakshadvija, I am the original personality of Godhead. But in order to create, maintain, and annihilate this cosmic manifestation, I act through my material energy. And according to the different grades of activity, my representations are differently named. One who doesn't consider Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, or the living entities in general to be separate from the Supreme, and who knows Brahma, actually realizes peace. Others do not. Sri Parikshit said, having heard these words from Indra, godly Narada replied, well said, Sir, well said, and hastily went to Brahma's planet. Then Narada first heard from a distance the huge sound of the many great sacrifices performed increasingly and with great devotion by the sages in Brahmaloka, on Brahmaloka. He then beheld among the sages the Supreme Lord in his Mahapurush form, looking very much satisfied, decorated with crowns of matted locks. The Lord in his thousand-headed form, the personification of sacrifice, had appeared there with his consort just to accept the offerings and delight his worshippers. To enliven lotus-born Brahma, the Lord consumed all the items offered him, placing them into his thousand mouths with his thousand hands. After awarding the performers of the sacrifices the benedictions they desired, Lord Mahaprabhu went to his sleeping quarters. As the goddess Lakshmi massaged his feet, he entered his pastime of sleep. At the Lord's request, Brahma then instructed his sons to continue the sacrifices while he went to his own royal court to deliberate on the management of the universe. As Brahma sat comfortably on his universal throne, absorbed in hearing and reciting the glories of his Lord, tears flowed from his eight eyes. We know that our Brahma has four heads. Yeah, in other universes, it's different. Surrounding Lord Brahma in attendance were the personified powers of universal rulership. Narada came close, offered respects to his father by falling to the ground like a stick, and then spoke. Sri Narada said, "It is you who have truly received the mercy of Lord Hari. After all, you are the master of all masters of the living beings of the universe, the grandfather of all the worlds. You alone create, maintain, and devour the 14 worlds. You forever rule the universe, and you are known as the self-born. Present in person in your assembly are the Vedas, Puranas, and other scriptures, the revealers of truth, who were born from your four mouths. Your world can be attained only by saintly persons who faultlessly perform their prescribed social duties, free from pride and other vices for 100 lifetimes." It is said like Brahma Kaudya Madhava Sampradaya, in Brahma Sampradaya in India, they don't follow Lord Chaitanya, but they follow Brahma Madhava Sampradaya, so Madhava's tradition. And it is said that one who was pious for 100 lifetimes, completely pious, yeah, like, and you have to do this and that, you become eligible to become Lord Brahma. Not go back to God, but to become Lord Brahma. So Srila Prabhupada said, you can make it in one lifetime to go back to God. "Within the universe, there is no higher world than yours. Even Lord Narayana's Vaikuntha planet is found inside your world. On Brahmaloka, Lord Narayana resides always in his manifest form, as the lotus navel Mahapurush. He eats his shares of sacrifice and grants the sacrificial results. Also in the distant past, you made many attempts and were unable to find him. After performing austerities, you finally saw him just for a moment in your heart. Therefore, you are surely the dearest devotee of Lord Krishna. Indeed, you are none other than Krishna himself, appearing in various bodies for your pastimes." Sri Parikshit said, so now hear the reaction, about the reaction of Lord Brahma. Thus, loudly praising Brahma, going before him with great devotion again and again, the sage Narada expansively sang Brahma's glories, as he had heard them from Indra and seen them with his own eyes. Merely by hearing what Narada said, Brahma grew disturbed. He anxiously covered his ears and said over and over again, "I am just a servant." With some effort, the four-headed Brahma checked the anger stirred within him by hearing what no one should hear and rebuked his son Narada. Commentary. Having to work with the material mode of passion, Lord Brahma is sometimes briefly affected by anger. Here, because his son praised him ineptly as the independent Supreme Lord, he almost lost his temper. Sri Brahma said, "I am not the Supreme Lord Krishna. On what authority and by what logic do you say this? Haven't I constantly taught you about this service, you were a little boy?" In Brahminical culture, one should not make any claim unless it is upheld by the Vedas or their authorized supplements. Thus, Brahma rightly demands the scriptural evidence for Narada's statements. At the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam recounts, Brahma had carefully educated his son in spiritual science. His personal energy, Mahamaya, stands within his sight like a maid servant. It is she who deploys her material modes to create, maintain, and demolish this world. All of us are subject to her and bewildered. So you should not think me the recipient of even a trace of Krishna's mercy. By the power of Krishna's Maya, I'm always deluded by various conceits. I think myself a controller, grandfather, and spiritual master of the universe. Proud of my birth from Krishna's lotus navel, I think myself a great ascetic, his great worshipper. I am overwhelmed by the countless duties of universal management. Worrying about the imminent destruction of my planet, I live in terror of the all-devouring end of time. All I want for myself is liberation. For this purpose of liberation, I engage others in worshiping the Lord and also worship Him myself. Since He is the Lord of the universe, is there any place where He doesn't reside? He accepts sacrificial offerings from me only to promote the Vedic teachings and show special favor to the sacrifices themselves, which are dear to Him because He is their original creator. Just consider this, my dear professor of logic. He loves only devotion. He shows His mercy only to His devotees, never to non-devotees. Forget about my having any devotion for Him. I would be happy if only it were true that I never offend Him. I cannot expect Him to tolerate my offenses as He does Lord Shiva's. With benedictions obtained from me, the wicked Hiranyakashipu became the tormentor of all the worlds dedicated to violence against Vaishnavas. After the Lord in His form of Nrisimhadeva destroyed Hiranyakashipu, I and my entourage stood fearful at a distance, trying to praise the Lord with skillful prayers. But He would not even honor us with a sidelight glance. Yet, when Prahlada was inaugurated king, the Lord at once became pacified. Then I slowly approached Him, and He angrily ordered me, "You should not give such benedictions to demons or lotus born." Nonetheless, I kept on giving benedictions to wicked demons like Ramana. Whose tongue can even mention the sins Ramana has done? Remember the offenses committed against the Lord by Indra and other demigods I appointed. The excessive pride of those demigods constantly perverts their discrimination. Indra sent rain to retaliate for the Govardhana sacrifice, sometimes fought against the Lord, and committed other offenses. The Lord of the waters, Varuna, offended the Lord by kidnapping Nanda Maharaja, by failing to return the cows belonging to Vana, and so on. Yamaraja made mistakes like allowing the wrongful death of the son of the Lord's teacher, and Kuvera was responsible for the wicked misdeeds of Shankachuda and others. In the lower planetary systems live the deities who always attack Lord Vishnu's devotees, and also living there are serpent friends of Kaliya, who by nature are contaminated by anger. And recently, by the magic, I stole the calves and young friends the Lord was watching after in Vrindavana. I took them all away while the boys were having lunch. And commentary, in Brahma's opinion, the last offense, his own, was worse than all the transgressions committed by the other demigods. While Krishna was enjoying lunch with his friends in the sacred forest of Vrindavana, Brahma disturbed him by stealing the cows and boys Krishna was personally protecting. Resorting to mystic power, Brahma removed them from Krishna's presence and hid them in a cave. I then saw some most amazing wonders and became frightened. Offering prayers and bowing down to the Lord, I thought, I'm so arrogant. But now, in his pastime as a coward boy, he has tricked me. Krishna arranged for Brahma to see that he had continued playing with the boys and cows for a whole year, even after Brahma had supposedly kidnapped them. Brahma saw each of the boys and cows assume the spiritual form of the personality of Godhead, each holding within himself all the universes. Suddenly realizing the seriousness of his offense, Brahma became afraid. He thought himself arrogant because he had now dared approach with prayers and obeisances the Lord he had repeatedly offended. Brahma focused his mind on Lord Krishna standing before him as a small, covered boy, holding a handful of chipped rice and yogurt from someone else's plate in his left hand, which is amazing, okay, because he should have been fine. And Brahma was astounded. The Lord had defeated him, and now the Lord was not even responding to his prayers. And two last verses I want to read for today, because they are very important. Simply by the spontaneous glance of favor upon me from his lotus face, I became joyful. I realized how fortunate I was to have visited the land of Raja, which is so dear to him. Again about Vrindavana. Today I read the chapter how Srila Prabhupada is going to live in Vrindavana. Narada might wonder how everything seemed all right with Brahma so soon after Brahma's blunder and embarrassment. How was he now sitting happily in his own abode? One answer Brahma gives here is that he at once felt the purpose of his life fulfilled just by seeing the Lord's ever-smiling face. And he had also received the rare opportunity to stay a short time in Sri Vrajadham. Vraja is the most sacred land, and Krishna is the only shelter of its residents. Thus, Brahma felt that after having mistreated the cows and covered boys of Vraja, it was best for him to leave quickly and go back to Brahma Loka. Fearing I would commit more offenses if I stayed there too long, I then went away. What else need I tell you about my ill fortune? So he is ending like he's proven, he's trying to prove to Narada that he didn't receive any mercy of Lord Krishna. He said, I committed so many offenses. And now, finally, I was so fortunate I came to Vraja. And when I had to leave it, what else can I say about my ill fortune? But we know that Brahma is a great devotee. And this is like the behavior of a devotee. When we read this book, we can see how devotees, they're very sincere, they don't try to pretend it. They really feel, I didn't deserve any Krishna's mercy, I didn't receive any Krishna's mercy. And all others are better than me. This is how devotees behave. Yet he's sending his name to Lord Shiva. So this is about greatness of Lord Brahma. I mean, like, this is just amazing how humble he is. When we read that, he's sincerely saying that. Yeah, he's saying, I didn't receive any mercy. I offended Lord Krishna. And that picture, if you see that, is Lord Brahma, he's praying, and little Krishna, boy Krishna, he's standing, and he's looking at him, and he's not saying anything. Because Krishna, he's thinking, I want to play with my friends, and who is he with four heads? He came to Vraja, because in Vrindavan, he forgets all the things that some big man with four heads came, he's offering me prayers, and I just want to run away and to play with my friends. And Lord Brahma is thinking, oh, he's not answering my prayers, but he's not answering because he just wants to to play with his friends. And okay, so that's about the verse today. Mukta Vandya Prabhu, I saw you made a few points here.
Yeah. Something in the verse about the airplanes that can fly between planets, and there's one conversation of there's some verses in the Bhagavatam about birds can fly, big birds that can fly between planets, and Prabhupada, it might be in the fifth canto, the disciple asked Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, we've never seen anything like that. And Prabhupada said, what have you seen? You see inside of your mother's womb. There's so many incredible things, you know, in the Shastras that were like, you know, you have to have faith. You have to have faith, and implicit faith in the spiritual master and the Shastras. Then all the secrets of the Vedas will automatically be revealed to a person, but without faith, a person thinks, that's a fairy tale, it's mythology. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada would say, mythology, this is not mythology, just because we don't have an experience in this little tiny life that we have now, at the present moment, that doesn't mean anything. Sariputta was here, he gave a class one time, he was talking about the structure of the universe from the fifth canto, and he's a brilliant scientist, very brilliant, and he gave one example which I liked. He said if there's a little tiny bug walking in at the bottom of one of the cracks on the floor, that's his whole life, that little tiny crack on the floor, he can't think of anything else. If you try to tell him about, you know, what we see out here, what we take for granted out here, he has no experience of that, so he might think, oh, that's mythology, that's not reality. But that it's just, he just doesn't have the experience. So we're so limited, we're very limited in our experience, and it's not a reason to dismiss any of the statements of the Bhagavatam, like birds flying between planets, or so many things, using a mountain to churn the ocean of nectar, so everything. And so another point is that Lord Brahma, Narada Muni was praising him, and Lord Brahma said, on what authority do you say all these things? And that was we're supposed to be like that in especially early in the movement. It was considered perfectly good if somebody is giving class or making a statement. practical statement that that you didn't weren't familiar with or didn't had some doubt about, you could say where is that in Prabhupada's books? You have to be able to give a reference for it. In those days, it was only Prabhupada's book, so he had to be able. And the final thing I wrote down was about Lord Brahma was thinking about his offenses in the past, and he considered himself to be the worst offender because he stole Krishna's friends and calves and kept them hidden. He was conscious of other demigods, like Lord Shiva's offense, but he considered Lord Indra's offense, but he considered his to be the worst. And there's, I can remember at least one purport where Prabhupada says that we should always remember our past offenses, not only our past offenses among devotees, but our sinful activities from before coming to Krishna consciousness. Our lives were practically nothing but sinful activities. So you should always remember past sinful activities and hear offenses and be sorry for them. You should, yeah.
I just wanted to ask, because many times I heard that when first life in the material world is usually life of Brahma. Is it like Srila Prabhupada said that?
There's a statement in the Bhagavatam.
Yeah, because I didn't find
it. There's other statements. It's a point that I've never really been clear, but it's definitely there.
Oh.
That when you first fall, you take the birth as Lord Brahma. I don't know how that works, but that's what it says. In at least one specific place in a verse or purport.
So, like, at first Brahma is a very pure devotee, and then gradually may become not a pure devotee, or just goes back to God.
Yeah,
and they say, I remember, in the actions, they say that our Brahma is a devotee.
You know, the logical challenge would be, well, if Lord Brahma is a pure devotee, then if we take birth as Lord Brahma, then why do we go lower? Why don't we just go back to Godhead? So, I don't know.
Srila Prabhupada is explaining that lecture. He's not a very pure devotee because he's a devotee, he's saying, but he wants to enjoy this material world. Yeah, he said he wants to enjoy. So then maybe he wants to enjoy more. Okay.
I actually heard Prabhupada say in a morning walk just a few days ago, a devotee was asking him about Lord Brahma, and Prabhupada is saying, you know, he's not a pure devotee, he has material desires, and the disciple. He's not a pure devotee, he's the head of our sampradaya. And Prabhupada said, well, you don't have to be a devotee to be head of a sampradaya. I mean, I had never heard him say that before, but I heard him say it on that morning walk. There's so many things that we hear, and it's not like we're going to understand everything or be able to fit everything together. And like the material, especially in so-called science, everything has to fit together in like a neat package. It's like this has to go there, and this has to go there, and this has to go there, and this can never move over here, and this can never contradict this down here. But there's another statement I read by Prabhupada where he said that all apparent contradictions are reconciled in the personality of a person of Krishna. God, Krishna is not. Krishna is so vast, and his personality is activities are infinite. We can't expect everything to always fit in neat little boxes. Anyway, that's
of logic.
Logic, or he said this, or like Prabhupada said, well, Vishwanath Chakravarti gives this opinion about why Krishna closed her eyes while he was killing Putana, and this Acharya Sridhar Swami gives this opinion. So it was like, what, different opinions? But I thought, you know, it's the absolute truth. The absolute truth is one. Shouldn't there be only one reason?
Many reasons.
Shouldn't there be only one opinion? But it's not really like that. It's there's different devotees see things from different their own. Madhyashoda doesn't see Krishna the same as the gopis see Krishna. When Krishna went into the wrestling arena at Kamsa's, everybody in